Yes, indeed. All right. Y'all have a good one. Free. I wish I
could give all I'm longing for. This is Kathy Diaz, your Monday host of Global Village. Join me for an exploration of Afro-Cuban rhythms from next door and around the world with other musical stops along the way. That's every Monday on Global Village from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM. This is the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. We cover news and public issues affecting areas students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. I'm Julie Patel-Liss, head of journalism at Cal State LA. Just over 75 years ago, Cal State LA's student newspaper was born. Many of its former editors and reporters now grace newsrooms around the country. Two are top editors at the Los Angeles Times, an amazing feat considering it's still the biggest newsroom west of the Mississippi. A few of those alumni were on campus recently to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the newspaper where they got their start. They were joined by other University Times alumni, former advisors and professors, current students and campus staff, including folks from the university's advancement team. A VIP mixer before the event allowed alumni to mingle over light refreshments and reminisce in the newsroom they spent so much of their college lives in. Several alumni noted that the UT newsroom hasn't changed much over the decades. Next, we all walked over to the library for the main event, where College of Arts and Letters Dean Stephen Trascoma and Television, Film, and Media Studies Chair Christina Hackle welcomed folks. The program commenced with a star-studded panel featuring LA Times Managing Editor Hector Becerra and Assistant Managing Editor Ruth Ann Salido. Becerra and Salido were both former editors-in-chief of the University Times during the 1990s and 1980s, respectively. The panel also included Marisa Martinez, a more recent UT former editor-in-chief, who's now audience engagement editor at Civil Eats, and Jackie Quinn, a WUSA 9 reporter and former Cal State LA journalism student from the early 2000s, who flew out from D.C. for the event. Here's Becerra during the panel, describing the role that the University Times played in his career.
I think the thing about the UT is coming from Boyle Heights, having parents who, you know, officially only had 6 years of education, who couldn't really teach me how to schmooze, how to network, how to approach people. It was kind of like, in many ways, my first real life experience with, you know, the world outside. I mean, the first murder that I ever covered was as a college journalist. I went to El Sereno. It was a double murder involving two students. One of them was a Cal State student. It's the first time I ever talked to LAPD detectives and kept in touch with them. It's the first time that I ever put in public records requests. It's the first time that you know, I was like Ruth Ann, I was naturally shy. You know, it's the first time that I started just approaching people and just kind of cold asking them questions. It was the first time that I, you know, made people uncomfortable by writing stories that were critical. And it was the first time that I, among the first times that I really kind of like put, I basically had to tell people with more authority than I did to pound sand. I was going to do my job. And I had a right to get certain records, and the law backed me up. It was real life, you know, and the college paper, the UT, was real life. I don't know how it is back then. I think probably about the same, but back then there were people in at the UT who were, you know, late 30s, 40s. There were also students from the early entrance program who were 15. I mean, it was the whole gamut of people and life experiences. And there was a lot of, at times back then, a lot of yelling and crying and screaming and pounding on tables. And that was just me, you know? And so it really felt real, and it felt gritty, and it really informed who I was going to be as a journalist. And frankly, when I first got my internship in Nashville, Tennessee, and I had to drive 2,000 miles to the South, I was nervous as hell. it was with clips that I got from the University Times. And I got in, I think, pretty easily, actually. I mean, my clips were very strong. And that was a testament to the college paper and the experiences that it afforded me.
Thanks to Cal State LA Information Technology Services Multimedia Production Specialist Marla Ulloa and Angela Del Beriste for that soundbite. A mixer after the panel gave folks a chance to reconnect and to refuel with food and drinks. One of the most buzzworthy parts of the event was an adjoining library exhibit showcasing about 20 front pages of the University Times from over the decades. We'll hear more about that in a bit. Audience members also got a taste of the UT's history from a video produced by my colleague April Brown, with help from me as the writer and our colleague Tony Cox. You'll hear the three of our voices narrating the video. Let's hear that story now.
The first student newspaper began circulation in 1948, 1 year after the school, then known as LA State, opened its doors. Though it's now called the University Times, the first paper was also produced and run by students. Its inaugural issue covered things like the first annual picnic and the short history of Los Angeles State College. For a few months in 48, the paper didn't have a name at all. But by October, the College Times emerged. When LA State became Cal State LA in 1972, the paper's name changed as well. The University Times was born.
75th anniversary. We're celebrating it this year.
This year, the UT leaders decided to honor the paper's past with logos from its decades, sharing crucial news about the campus and community.
For 75 years, the UT student journalists have produced thoughtful, impactful coverage of the campus and neighboring communities. They've told riveting tales and documented historic moments.
I'll be focusing on the staff with the written articles and the production side of stuff.
They gain invaluable hands-on experience, providing an important public service, and they form lifelong bonds with each other.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, Golden Eagles!
In the past 5 years, I've been fortunate to serve as the UT's advisor and founder of its community news arm. In that time, the outlets have won over 60 journalism awards and honors, including some notable national ones. They've been honored for their audience engagement efforts on social media.
Welcome to the news break.
The UT's website, investigative and social justice stories, and more. These are contests where Cal State LA students compete locally and statewide with top-notch schools like USC, UCLA, UC Berkeley, Stanford, and nationally with great journalism schools, including Mizzou, Syracuse, Northwestern, and ASU. The students have also had dozens of their stories cross-published on professional news outlets.
Many of the UT editors and staff share their stories on the Cal State LA Community News Hour radio show and podcast. The program airs monthly on KPFK 90.7 FM, showcasing student work about our campus community and the areas where students come from. The show has a reach of about 1 million listeners.
Once they're seniors and they take the investigative class, I partner with them on investigative stories, including 3 published in local news outlets the past few years. One project was credited for changing a state law. Another won a professional journalism award. And the most recent one was credited in an LA Times story and shared widely online. Our students represent the rich diversity of LA. Many live in undercovered areas of the city and county, such as the East Side and South LA, so they find stories that others don't. They amplify voices in these communities, shine a spotlight on them, and engage those communities in important public issues.
Over the years, several outstanding student editors-in-chief have guided the University Times coverage through some of the most momentous news events of our city, the nation, and across the globe.
One of the worst places to be during the height of the rioting here in Los Angeles was inside a commercial building, any building, but particularly inside a liquor store.
Just like the professionals, they each worked tirelessly to provide journalistic integrity to the paper while maintaining their own course loads, at times without the tools that their larger campus competitors enjoyed.
No hate speech! No hate speech! No hate speech!
And yet, time after time, story after story, headline after headline, they got the job done, making sure the UT provided accurate, timely information to its readers, no matter how big or small the story. Their legacy continues today.
So to all the student leaders, advisors, and professors who came before us, we thank you for what you have built. Congratulations on 75 years. The video version of that story can be found at csulauniversitytimes.com/about. That's csulauniversitytimes.com/about, ABOUT. Sasha Funes, the current editor-in-chief of the UT, worked on the archival photos for the video in the library exhibit, along with managing editor Jackson Tamariello, Ashley Romero, and Giselle Mauricio. Special thanks go to the Cal State LA Library and Head of Special Collections, Azalea Camacho, Communication Strategist Kelsey Brown, Dean Carlos Rodriguez, and Library Service Desk Evening Coordinator Hayes Walker for their help with the exhibit and the entire event. The music you heard in the story is called Celebration by Scott Holmes Music under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 4.0 International License. There are many others to thank for help with the event, and those credits can be found on the video version of this story, which, again, is available at csulauniversitytimes.com/about. Besides the video, alumni enjoyed looking over a bookcase filled with some of the University Times students' awards over the years. And right next to it, a library exhibit showcasing historical and impactful front pages from over the decades. The exhibit started with the front page of the UT's first issue in 1948. It included a 1981 front page about the campus's first fatal shooting, a front page story from 1992, both documents the not guilty verdicts in the Rodney King beatings, and alleged racism on Cal State LA's own campus. Among other things, the story outlines how two journalism instructors were allegedly targeted around the same time. An issue from just a few years ago featured an investigation into alleged unsafe dining hall conditions. The story was by Victoria Ivey, a former editor-in-chief who is now a demographics and equity reporter for the Southern California News Group. The university's dining hall contractor was replaced a couple months after the investigation. Now, let's get some behind-the-scenes insight into the exhibit and how it was pulled together by student researchers Giselle Mauricio and Ashley Romero. The two spent hours at the campus library accessing the UT's archives there to find some of the UT's most impactful additions over the years. They produced this piece about it for Professor Julian Reyes's podcasting class.
Hello and welcome to the What's Brewing On podcast, where we talk about all things past, present, and future. I'm your host, Giselle.
And I'm Ashley.
So for today's episode, we will be giving you guys some behind-the-scenes details on the 75th anniversary event for Cal State LA's University Times newspaper.
We'll touch on things like how we prepared for it, what were some challenges we went through, and how it went overall.
All right, so first we're going to be talking about what we did to prepare for this anniversary event. Giselle and I are part of the PR team for the Cal State LA Journalism Department. So essentially we're in charge of kind of advertising what's going on in the journalism department, what's happening. And so to first prepare for this event, we assisted the editor-in-chief of the University Times newspaper. And we looked through a bunch of archives of old newspapers dating back to the very beginning. So we're talking 1947. And we just looked at a bunch of front pages and different articles that were going to end up being blown up into bigger pictures that would go on display at the anniversary event. I don't want to speak for Giselle, but I know for me, looking through the archives kind of gave me more of like a real real journalism feel, and kind of just like being able to like look through old articles and kind of see like what people were writing about back then, and being able to like be a part of picking the best of the best over the decades and being able to put it all together was pretty rewarding for me.
I think it was a really good like foot in to PR and stuff like that. I honestly really enjoyed it. Yeah, I guess like looking through the archives and stuff, you see like how they used to write before and what they had on it, and it was really fun to see. So yeah, what were some things that you found interesting about like some of the front pages you saw? I know for me, I was getting really excited with the little color they had in
it. Yeah.
But I think it's just like the format that they had before, like, stood out a lot. And so that's, I think, I really like that part, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you there. And I also think what was really surprising for me was learning that they printed every day at the beginning. I think that that's a lot, you know, both of us being part of the newspaper last semester, printing every 2 weeks was a lot for us. So I can't imagine printing every day, which was really cool to see. But also seeing how like the language was different back then, what they chose to cover and what they didn't choose to cover, which I thought was really interesting. I know that there were some really big moments, especially in LA history, that we thought were going to be front pages for us to go ahead and display. Key moments like the East LA walkouts, the Rodney King riots, and just things like that. Kobe Bryant passing away, Michael Jackson, the Northridge earthquake. And those weren't necessarily front page news articles, nor were some of them even covered to begin with. So that was a little interesting to see. But it was also really cool to see like the Obama Mania one.
Mm-hmm.
That one was really awesome. And then, yeah, just like I think the 90s had a lot of cool like bright pink colors. And like, but that was really cool.
I think even the advertisements that they had on it.
Yeah.
I know me and Sasha, our editor-in-chief, we were just kind of like so in awe of like all the advertisements they had and the coupons for
yes.
the...
Yeah, the King Taco.
Oh, King Taco. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm like, we need that back.
Yeah.
So
that was a nice discovery to find out that we had a King Taco and we don't anymore. So sad day.
I know we had some trouble too, you know, with...
finding certain years and getting access to certain years. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I would like to talk to whoever was in charge then.
I know.
to see what's up with that. But yeah, it's really interesting to see how things were ran. I feel like it was a very like biased newspaper back then.
Yeah, I feel like they were able to like, I want to put this, and they put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's a lot more different now as we experience. But yeah, I think I went with Sasha and her managing editor, Jackson, one time. And... we're just like, can't remember the year specifically, but we needed a certain years, and we're like, where are they? We saw them last time, they're not here this time. And so I think that kind of played into the fact that we were in the library for a long period of time where we didn't actually have to be there for, just because they had misplaced the books and we're waiting and kind of panicking. And so that kind of played into us struggling a little bit. And then some last minute things they gave us to do too with Professor Cox, I guess, side project that he had.
Especially last minute. And
let's just jump into the day of the event. Like, despite everything we went through, I was like looking forward to it. It was like my first event that I helped in and stuff like that. Like,
same.
Well, I got there and I took a little peek inside the library before everything started, and so I saw, you know, all the cameras set up and people kind of running around with their cameras and even them filming behind the scenes stuff for us. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah.
And just the whole production set up and what it was like.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see alumni come back, but like from 30-40 years ago, not just like in the past 5 to 10 years, right? Like, it was really cool to see old alumni come back, just see where they're at in life now. And it was really cool to see like the notable alumni that we have, especially the ones that are like, in these high positions at the LA Times, which kind of just like was a great representation of it's in arm's reach and we can do it too.
Yeah.
So I think that was really cool. It was really cool to see everything together, see the archives on display and see, be like, oh, I've helped pick that one out.
Yeah.
And I picked that one. So that was really cool. I think all in all, it was like a really inspiring event as a student, writer, and employee in the journalism industry of just kind of like what can be done, almost like the fruits of your labor, in the sense of like we did all of this work leading up to it and it was for this, right? And like to kind of see it all plan out, it was really cool.
I saw a lot of people going up to the blow-ups of the front pages that we picked. It was cool. It was nice like seeing them and, you know, like, oh, look at this one. And like, I guess it's nice, it's like rewarding. Oh, I picked that one and they really liked it and it caught their eye. You know, so that was like really cool.
As the advisor of the University Times the past 5 years, I want to thank all the advisors and professors in our program who came before me and I wish the UT another 75 years of success in serving the campus and surrounding community. You're listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel Liss. After the break, we'll hear writer-director Josue Hernandez's tips for writing a script. Stay with us.
I'm Chuck Foster, host of Reggae Central, right here on KPFK. Join me Sunday afternoons from 2 to 5 for 3 hours of the best in ska, rocksteady, roots and culture, dub and dancehall, from the foundational Jamaican recordings to the latest international releases. That's Reggae Central, 2 to 5 p.m. every Sunday, right here on KPFK.
KPFK, your progressive media outlet, is listener-supported commercial-free radio. But did you know you don't have to wait for the station fund drives to support your favorite radio station? You can donate online at any time. Visit kpfk.org. That's kpfk.org. And we thank you for your support.
Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel Liss. I have a question for you. Are you a storyteller? Whether you produce news stories like me or do other types of writing, have you ever wondered how to turn your story into a screenplay? Most of us live in or near Hollywood, so it's not surprised many storytellers here might want to try their hand at screenwriting. If you're one of them, you're about to hear some great tips from Josue Hernandez, an up-and-coming writer and director who shares his industry insights with our student Daniel Fuentes. The tips should come in handy for our journalism students, too. One of the joys of teaching at Cal State LA, especially teaching the community news class, is seeing our students' stories out in the world. Our students often find unique stories because they live in undercover areas. They often also have important personal stories to share because of their own life experiences. So yeah, it would be nice to see them bring their stories to new audiences, and screenwriting could be a good way to do that. Our journalism program is housed in the Television, Film, and Media Studies department, so really it's a natural fit. That said, without further ado, I'm pleased to bring you Daniel Fuentes in conversation with writer-director Josue Hernandez. This piece was produced in Professor Julian Reyes's podcasting class.
Hello, and welcome to the Frame by Frame podcast, the show that takes you through the unique life journeys filmmakers take on their way to making their art. I'm your host, Daniel Nicolas Fuentes, and in today's episode, we will discuss the journey of becoming a screenwriter, how to get more eyes on your script, and how your own life journeys can be the greatest catalyst to writing some very powerful scripts. Our guest today is Josue Hernandez, a screenwriter and director, and overall great guy, who will share with us how to elevate a script and how to be able to send it to screenwriting competitions while pulling from your own life experiences to write a compelling story. Hi, Josue. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Of course, happy to be here.
As I've got to know you, I've learned that your whole journey has been, you know, that kid who grew up a little bit of time here, mm-hmm. got taken to Mexico, mm-hmm. came back, and having that, like, not awkward, but having this phase where you don't know where you might have to belong.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's awkward, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up here in SoCal when I was 11, like, born and raised here when I was 11. We moved to Mexico, so I was there for 6 years. And then I didn't really feel like I belonged there, but I really enjoyed it. Like, after a while, I felt like, okay, this is, like, my town. And then, of course, I made the decision to move here. So when I was 17. And so I think I just moved to Mexico at a transition period, because that's, like, when you're hitting puberty and stuff. And then I moved here at another transition period where you're becoming an adult. And so it was just those two moments were, like, pivotal to just forming my character for sure.
Yeah, and also I remember you speaking on just, like, not necessarily the language barrier because you knew Spanish, but that whole aspect of, you know, maybe I have this accent or something that, you know, people can catch on. I know for personally myself, like, these challenges and setbacks that I've had in my own life have made me, like, want to express myself in a creative way. Do you feel like that was anything like of a catalyst? Like, were you in, not so much, like, but, like, the dungeon of, like, oh, let me just, you know, if I can't do anything here, do I want to start, like, drawing or writing or anything like that?
So it definitely wasn't, like, the inspiration, but, like you said, like, a catalyst. Being just in general, like, an outsider during those transition periods, it really fostered, like, your just, like, fight or flight, your, like, survival mechanism, especially, like, in friend groups and stuff like that. Like, going to Mexico, and I know Spanish, but I was definitely, like, a no sabo kid, like, when I moved there. And I was just, like, trying my best to stay under the radar. So I'm just like, oh, what's the best way I can stay under the radar is by trying to make other people laugh. And, like, that's kind of, like, where that part of my personality developed. And same thing when I moved here, where I'm just like, okay, how can I... And this is more just on me. Like, it's not like people were making fun of me, but I felt like an outsider. So I did that a lot. And I think that showed me that... in a way, like, I was performing, like, I was, like, putting on an act to fit in. So, you know, I had never really connected it, but I think you're onto something for sure, because I've always felt creative, but knowing that I could, like, slip into one culture and then slip back out and then slip back into another one does kind of feel like, in a way, like, super powery almost. After I have embraced it, because definitely for sure when I was going through it, it was hard, and you're like, I don't know if I belong. And then I ended up embracing it. I was like, I belong in both. I belong in neither, and that's totally okay. And just, like, going in and out.
So breaking into the comedy scene, like, that helped your writing as well, or would you say that it's a different style of writing?
I think it's a different style of writing because, well, you're talking about stand-up comedy.
Yeah, stand-up comedy.
Because it's performative. So I for a long time, I thought I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. Like, once I performed stand-up comedy, and I got, like, my first couple laughs, chuckles, not even laughs.
I would have laughed.
It's just, like, I was like, oh, the things that I'm writing, people are laughing about, and it felt good. After the pandemic hit, I realized that what I liked the most about writing stand-up was the writing part. I was never really a great performer.
Yeah.
I think I would be a okay performer, like, average, maybe slightly above average, but pretty average performer. I would get, like, criticized a lot for my jokes being more so stories than they were jokes. And I would take that as a negative. I'm just like, oh, I need to write more, like, witty, like, quick jokes. And then after the pandemic hit and everything shut down and I wasn't doing stand-up, but I was still writing, I was like, oh, I think I enjoy the writing part more and I can explore the storytelling part. And then, you know, sprinkle in jokes on the side. So that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah. I mean, such a great, for, like, anybody listening, such a great avenue is, you know, it's just trying things out. Like how you said, it was stand up and you found out that you liked the writing so much more. Or you could be, like, someone who's into novels and realize, you know, maybe this crazy long format, it might not be for me. And I might have more of a visual aspect. Could we speak on the process of these, or just more about, like, where you're submitting these scripts to?
So I was doing, like, a class at Second City for pilot writing, and that's where I wrote the first script that I have. I was just kind of stuck as to, like, what to do with it. I mean, my whole class was telling me, my whole class of 9 people were just like, oh, this is a good script.
That's solid.
But I'm just like, okay, well, you know, we've written this together. I don't really know how biased you are. Like, you're not going to tell me my script is ass. So... I ended up finding, there's a website called Coverfly where they aggregate all the competitions. They don't have any competitions themselves, I don't think, but it's one of the websites that has like a list of all the combinations of different festivals and screenwriting competitions. So that's where I started submitting. I got advice from a director that I worked with. I was doing a short film with him. I was the only PA on set, and I was halfway through writing my script when I was working with him, and I saw like what he was doing, and he was telling me about how he got the funding because people saw his short on a film competition and stuff like this. So I was like picking his brain about it, and he's the one that kind of pointed me in this direction. And that's when I started submitting to different competitions through Coverfly with the first script, Nepantla. But yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, and that's also great information for people who, you know, I think at its bare bones, being a screenwriter is such a, like, a process that many people could attach themselves to, right? Being on the production side, it's like, well, I need the camera, I need a team. A screenwriter at its basic,
you don't even need a subscription to a software. Exactly. You can write that shit on Google Docs if you're really into it.
Yeah. So at its most,
it's hard, but you can do it.
Oh yeah. Trust me. In my first screenwriting class, I wrote like the first script on Word or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's free ones too. Like, think Writer Duet is free. You just export it with a watermark. There's a couple that are free, or Celtics is free too.
Celtics. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that one.
My suggestion is if you can't like pay the license fee for a software, do the free one. And then when you're ready to export it, just pay the monthly fee, export it without the watermark or whatever.
Yeah.
But we were saying, you can, writing is quote unquote easier to get into because there's not a barrier of like you need to get a camera.
It's I feel like many people could grasp that concept, and I feel like there's a lot of writers out there mm-hmm. who are writing and then they don't know what to do with it. They just wrote a short screenplay or mm-hmm. anything, and then they're like, well, now what? So I think having this avenue to grow as a writer is so much more helpful for them. Mm-hmm. You've submitted all these scripts. How would you say that your writing process has changed from when you first started mm-hmm. to where it is now?
So the first one I wrote was very autobiographical, and I feel like it needed to be because that was like the way to get my foot in the door. It was the easiest way for me to relate to characters. I'm just like, oh, this person's like so-and-so in my life. This other person's like so-and-so. And so it was really easy for me to build like the character sheet and be like, oh, this person believes this, this, this. These are the flaws. This is what they believe in. And I'm grateful that I did that on my first run. I've since read that first script, and there's a lot of things that I would want to go and change, but I think I'm just going to leave it as is. And then the second script that I wrote, I wanted to challenge myself to write something that I personally haven't gone through.
Mm.
So that first script, like I said, very autobiographical. It was easier because I just related to a lot of these characters. And so the second script that I wrote, it is grounded in like Mexican-American culture still. That's kind of like the place that I write from. But the things that these characters are going through, I've never been through the exact same thing that they're going through. So it was a challenge. You were talking about like the process, like how it's changed. Like before I wrote this one, I did a lot more research. I built out the characters a lot more, and even like how old they were, like what they were doing in school, like what kind of shit went down in their past that I'm not going to show in the pilot, but it's just in my head that I know that will inform their decisions like down the road. So that's for sure changed. And like I said, the reason it's changed is because I feel like I need to keep challenging myself to write outside of my own life. But you know, no matter what, it's still gonna bleed in.
Yeah,
I still have my experiences, and I think that's great, and it's gonna bleed into like different characters. Yeah, I'd say that's the biggest thing, is like the planning beforehand. Like right now I'm writing my third script, and I'm planning like crazy, and I'm like building the characters, I'm obsessing over like what their name is or how old they are and where they work, like all these things that you're not going to see in the show, but matter to me as a writer. And so I think that's what's changed throughout my writing process.
And or something that maybe people who are trying to get into writing can start paying attention to. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're talking about writers who have maybe not even started anything mm-hmm. or on their first go. Do you have any advice if they feel stuck? I know mm-hmm. you've mentioned you write a lot from your own, not from your own experience. You're trying, mm-hmm. you're trying to challenge yourself to get away from maybe this character is a resemblance of myself.
Yeah.
But would you say that that's still good to tap into?
Into your own experience? Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Because, I mean, for example, the second script that I wrote has to do with like a fragmented family two half siblings, and their single mom, and her mom gets Alzheimer's, and they're like trying to deal with that. I've never had that happen to me. My family's still together. None of my parents have Alzheimer's, but my grandma did. I know people in my life that have a fragmented family. I don't know what it's like to have your mom get diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but I can tap into that grief. I can tap into that feeling of seeing your parents get older and kind of, you know, grapple with that reality of just like, oh, they're not going to be here with us like all the time. And so even if that exact thing hasn't happened to me, I still have those fears. I still feel like that responsibility as a son to help your parents. Mm-hmm. So like I said, these exact things that have happened to these characters, no, they haven't happened to me. But if you get to the core of their feelings, I'm just like, I feel like I can tap into that. And I do think you should, because I think that's what makes characters more believable, when you can tap into their fears and their wants and stuff like
that. Yeah, I think, I mean, as you're saying it right now, I'm just discovering so much about writing that I didn't even know, which is the amount of pre-production.
Yeah, for sure.
Where you're just doing your own research.
Pre-production
and building these characters from literally the ground up. Yeah, at face value. Where, oh, this is a really cool character. And it's like,
yeah.
I mean, like,
that's literally what I did for my first one. And then I wrote myself into corners. I'm just like, oh, this character is, I have no idea why they're making this decision. And I just had to write it like that, because it would like close the act or whatever. But
yeah. No, I mean, for all the people who want to start writing, it's definitely, you got to put in the groundwork before. And then, yeah, and hopefully this helps too, because these are the mistakes and things that you've learned that maybe people could avoid as well.
Yeah.
On their first go around, where it's like, I don't have to write myself into this corner because I've established this character so well.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for anybody who has a background like myself in more cinematography, like I'd for sure write myself into corners, because I'm more, like I said earlier, just thinking about how each scene can look. You know, we've talked a lot about where you're writing from. Do you ever think about who you're writing for? Like the persons, the kids, the people?
Yeah, I think mostly for myself. I feel like if it's something that I can relate to, at least, I don't know, percentage wise, at least someone else is going to relate to that. I don't know how many people, but I don't think specifically in demographics like men, women, children, teenagers. I think more so about like people that have lived through something similar.
So just for the last closing statements, mm-hmm. on becoming a screenwriter, and all these were such great points for people to jump into it with a much more informed viewpoint on it.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have anything to say for people who just kind of are nervous about starting it? Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's film. It's a film industry. We're all terrified at the end of the day somewhat.
Sure. If you're a person that has an idea and it's kind of been like nagging at you for a while, and you're waiting, I'm talking about myself. If you're waiting for like the perfect time, or when you have the perfect set of skills or this or that, like that first idea that I had, I was very precious about it. I was like, I want to write this like when I can get it right and when someone's going to be able to make it. And I wrote it, and turns out it wasn't that precious after all. But I was proud that I wrote it. Like, I had one finished script. If you feel scared of writing, join a writer's group just for the heck of it. No one's going to care if you don't have a script, but join a writer's group so you can join a table read, so you can see what getting notes is. You can see what other people write, and you're like, oh, you know, I think I could do that. Yeah, I wish I would have done that sooner for sure.
Awesome. Just keep on writing, find a support group. And I think just like for anybody who's creative out there, it's just keep on going. Even when you feel like you don't like aren't progressing, it's like every inch forward is better than not doing it at all. Thank you so much for being our guest, Josue. This is the Frame by Frame podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Nicolas Fuentes. If you're interested in more episodes like this, stay around and just keep on pushing that artistic view forward. Thank you so much. This is a Cal State LA production, and that's it.
You're listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel Liss. You probably don't think much about where your morning cup of coffee comes from, or how it's made in different places. Some history and taste tests are coming up right after this break. Stay with us.
Hi, folks, this is Dom Flemons, the American Songster. Tune into Folk Scene every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. for the best in folk, roots, and Americana music. Each week you'll hear an hour-long interview and a performance with different artists and groups, which includes a newly recorded session and also classic broadcasts from the show's vast archives. Plus, the program plays all of our latest releases. That is Folk Scene every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles.
Oh no, my car broke down. This is quite unfortunate.
If that old junker in your driveway is a lost cause, get rid of it and help KPFK out in the process. It's as simple as calling 877-KPFK-AUTO and asking the operator to assist you in arranging for a pickup. We'll tow it away and we'll mail you all the necessary paperwork for writing it off of your taxes. Call us now at 877-KPFK-AUTO.
Oh no, my car broke down. That's so terrible. That's quite unfortunate. My stupid car doesn't work anymore.
Welcome back to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm April Brown. Many of us wake up to a cup of coffee, and some of us continue with this popular caffeinated beverage throughout the day. So take a moment and grab a cup of joe as Ethan Ramirez takes us on a tour of the coffee-growing world with the Express Yourself podcast.
Hello, everyone. I am your host, Ethan Rahen Ramirez, and this is the second episode of the Express Yourself podcast. I'm here in the King Hall studio at Cal State LA, joined by a coffee extraordinaire.
Hi, everyone. I'm Paloma.
And I'm also joined by my buddy, Jacob.
Hey, what's up?
Paloma, if you can just formally introduce yourself, major year experience with coffee.
All right. So this is my third year. And I'm my first year at Cal State LA. I'm a marketing major, and my experience with coffee is that I've been working with it for 4 years. I work at Starbucks, and I love it. I'm addicted.
And Jacob, your major?
What's up? I'm Jacob Chambers. I'm a graphic design major here. Been my last year. Been in college for a while now. And coffee makes me pretty crazy, but I'm here to taste some different flavors today.
Well, you've come to the right spot. Thank you both for being on this podcast. I know it took a lot of time out of your day, but you've definitely come to the right spot. We've got world coffee right here. Lebanese coffee, Turkish coffee, Saudi Arabian coffee.
On a world tour.
I was going to say we're traveling.
I'm taking it to a whole different world right now, definitely. Thank you. Special thanks to my friend Hussein and his mom who especially brewed this coffee with their heart and love. I know Hussein, you'll watch this later. Thank you.
Thank you.
I got the Turkish coffee from Cafe Istanbul, and I grabbed the Saudi Arabian coffee from Ali Mama Cafe. This was brewed last night, this was brewed this morning, and this was also brewed this morning. And it's also important to note that in the Middle East, specifically with these three countries, or maybe in general, the Middle East, they enjoy coffee through the day and through the night. It is a gesture of welcome and appreciation towards others. I feel like the coffee culture here is much different. It's much faster.
Yeah. I feel like over there, it's more like traditional, like cultural type of thing, because I have a friend and he's from over there and it's very like, he drinks coffee all the time since like a little kid.
Dang, still a little kid?
Yeah. Like he said his mom would make him coffee like as a little kid, and that's just like their tradition and everyone else from over there.
I wonder if they're immune to it. Like they could just have it any time of the day and they just don't have any.
Yeah, I heard it's like instant coffee, just like any type of
crazy stuff you can get your hands on.
That's interesting. I don't remember the first time I drank coffee. It must have been when I was like in high school, probably, or maybe before that. I don't think our parents ever let us drink coffee. And the culture is just so different, completely different.
Are they shorter over there?
Because
doesn't coffee stunt your growth?
I mean, it can, but my friend, he's like 6 foot, so I think he beat allegations against that way. Yeah.
They're fake. Blessed them right here on the Espresso Sal podcast.
Okay, so apart from tasting these coffees, we're going to be trying the Lebanese coffee first.
Sweet.
And all right. While I pour us a cup of coffee, well, just a taste, there's not a whole lot because this is brewed in a very specific manner to where they can't give you a large portion every time. Specifically with the Turkish coffee, it's a tiny little, a cup of metal. I wish I knew the name of it. Are you familiar with that?
No, I know what it looks like though.
It's just a tiny little bit in there and we'll be tasting, but it's super strong.
Delicacy.
Okay. Are you ready for some of the fun facts?
Yeah, give it a swoosh.
Many countries have changed their names over the course of centuries. However, Lebanon has remained the same for 4,000 years.
Dang.
The very first alphabet was introduced in Lebanon, the Phoenician alphabet. Hold on, I want to make sure we get good portions here.
Okay.
Oh, I'm excited.
It looks really, like, dark.
Thick. Yeah. So, this coffee is just the grounds and water? Or is it filtered through?
I don't know.
It looks like mud, kind of.
It does definitely
very, like, look goopy.
It's very... Can we somehow get a camera shot on this? Mr. Camera Operator, if you're ever so kind.
It looks good, though. It looks, like, chocolatey, kind of.
Oh, shit.
Okay. You are... ready to take a sip if you haven't already?
Yeah. Go ahead. Okay. Let's see. So if it's groundy, then we'll get our answer.
Okay.
Oh, sounded good. Okay, I'm honestly a fan.
You're a fan? How does it make you feel?
First thing I noticed for me is like texture, like it's very grainy. So I like that. And I feel like it doesn't have like a very bitter aftertaste. I mean, it's strong, but it tastes like pleasant to me, honestly. Like, I could see myself just like sipping on this casually.
Really? Okay. So we definitely are sure that they don't filter it through now, because it's definitely...
It's just grounds.
And hot water or something.
Powder and hot water.
Yeah. Wow. That is strong.
It's like I'm drinking a coffee like brownie mix.
It's really... It is very rich, it's smooth, and it's got a nice, like, smoky taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it tastes smoky for sure. I like it. I don't know if I would drink it that often.
I would definitely need some, like, oat milk and, like, some agave, some sweetener in here. But...
Oh, yeah, there's no, this is straight black coffee for the viewers.
Is that, like, disrespectful to add different things to their cup?
I don't know. No. I really don't know. I'm sure there are instances where they add sugar or some sort of condensed milk or creamer. I had it straight black because I didn't want anything to take away from the original taste. Although I'm sure there are traditional, like the notion and things of that. How does it compare?
It's growing on me.
What was that?
You just have to like sip on it slowly. It's not something you can like chug, I feel like. Yeah.
Maybe that's why it's so small. Mm-hmm. You have to sip on as well.
Mm.
What do you think about it?
Compared to other coffees that I drink, because I usually drink an Americano, which is just a shot of espresso with water. This tastes, if this makes any sense, it tastes like a warm home compared to my espresso that tastes like work. How does this coffee compare to the Lebanese coffee?
All right, this one's more citrusy and bitter, in my opinion. It tastes stronger.
Yeah, it's kind of like a similar taste for me in a way, but this one was more lighter and, yeah, a little bit more like fruity in a way, aftertaste. kind of like melanie, like, I don't know.
There's some sweetness in there. There's something in there. That's really good. Would you recommend it? The tip people?
Yeah, if you like black coffee, I feel like it's probably a better alternative. But if you like more of like a creamier coffee, you might not be a fan of it.
Okay, on to the next and final coffee.
Woohoo!
Yeah, time's been flying. How about y'all? How are y'all feeling right now?
Yeah.
Got this caffeine now. Now I'm good.
You can't see it, but my legs are moving really fast. Okay.
I'm doing good right now. I'm feeling nice.
Again, thank you for being on my show. You have been chosen for your unique set of abilities and skills. Anyways, on to the Saudi Arabian coffee. I have not tried this yet. Saudi Arabian coffee is also known as Gawa. It is a lightly roasted Arabica bean infused with spices. Let me know if y'all can taste the spices.
Gawa.
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 Let's see if y'all can handle the heat.
All right. How hot do we plan to go?
The spice level?
It's going to get fiery.
It might just be cinnamon. It might just be... The guy kind of hinted at me. It was just cinnamon.
It's going to be a habanero. This is now Hot Ones.
Hot Ones, welcome to the Hot Ones podcast.
The Express Yourself Hot Ones edition. Okay, like usual, let me pour y'all some cups while I state some of the fun facts.
All right.
Pour that, pour it up.
That's not kind of
loud. Let me be careful about this first.
Okay. Take your time, take your time.
Saudi Arabia is the largest country in the Middle East and the 13th largest in the world. Saudi Arabia was a part of the Ottoman Empire from the year 1517 to the end of the early 20th century when it collapsed. Oops, I'm okay.
Good.
Thank you. This one is Saudi Arabia. If y'all aren't familiar with the country, it is a very controversial country due to their violation of women's rights. Saudi Arabia has long prevented women from taking on a larger role in its society. They have a guardianship system. I'm sure y'all have maybe familiar with that. That means they cannot marry, divorce, travel, or get a job. They can't even have elective surgery without getting permission from their male guardians. Oh yeah, you're free to sip, by the way, and tell me what it's like. Let me give you these last two facts that I sourced. Saudi Arabia is also the birthplace for the world's second largest religion, Islam. A very interesting niche fun fact. They also have the tallest flagpole in the world. It is 561 feet long. And just to put into perspective, now remember, that flag is 561 feet tall. A three-story building is only about 30 feet tall.
That's not bad.
That flagpole is like a skyscraper. Okay, thoughts on the coffee? Piece of music.
The coffee is black. It's dark.
I honestly really like it. I feel like it's the best so far.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, because I feel like it's the most like normal one we've had so far, and it's just like not that bad. It's not too bitter. It's hidden for me.
Spices? Are there any spices that you taste in it?
I didn't taste too much. Maybe a little bit of cinnamon.
Honestly, it reminds me of like a black tea. Like
a black tea?
Like it tastes like tea, in my opinion.
Is that watery? I remember this Ali Mama Cafe. I think it has a really good rich taste, but it isn't like the other two.
No, it's different for sure.
It's smoother. It's more like American coffee.
Yeah, I think. Exactly. It reminds me of my Starbucks coffee. Yeah, Starbucks. More than the other ones. The other ones felt like there was something, like an oomph to it, you know?
This coffee isn't hitting like the other two, definitely. I don't think they're doing Saudi Arabian coffee justice right now from what I've read.
No, I think we need to go.
Wow, okay. So out of all of these three, because we're wrapping this up now.
All right.
Out of all these three, which ones are y'all taking?
I'm going with the first one.
Lebanese coffee?
Yeah, Lebanese. Okay.
That one is the most home feeling. That one is my choice as well.
Yeah.
That was great. I highly recommend that.
I would actually drink that one if it wasn't so late.
I'm going to go left and I'm going to go Saudi Arabian coffee for me.
That was the best one.
Is that
the McDonald's one?
Yeah, I low key.
McDonald's has good coffee.
I like a good iced coffee from McDonald's, so I'm not hating. Mm. It just reminds me of it.
Yeah.
Fair enough with a little bit of. You think? So you prefer the Saudi Arabian coffee the most, but let's say the Turkish coffee had some oat milk in it. Are you taking that instead?
Probably the Saudi Arabian.
Still?
Even yeah.
The oat in there?
Yeah, just, I don't know. The texture was kind of a bit much for me.
I was going to say, is it just the texture? That's
not the texture. It's just like, it's just too much. Like
that brings a wrap. And here are just a few people to thank. The music is brought to us by Lipstead. Again, special thanks to my friend Hussein for providing that amazing Lebanese coffee. It was a hit for me and Paloma. And the facts were all sourced from Facts Institute and factfile.com. Again, thank you two for joining us. This was a Cal State LA production in association with the Department of Television, Film, and Media Studies at Cal State LA. Distributed and all rights reserved by Ethan Rehan Ramirez. Thank you and enjoy your day.
Been listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. The show provides news about issues affecting the undercovered areas Cal State LA students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. That's all we have for now. Our executive producers are Professors Julie Patel-Liss and me, April Brown. Our hosts for this episode were Julie Patel-Liss, Tupac Zapata, and me. UT Community News editors this semester are Queen Adong, Cynthia Harbo, Tupac Zapata, Giselle Mauricio, Ashley Romero, Jonathan Chung, and Thomas Davila. The community news reporters are Kara Alexander, Jessica Galan, Laura Barney, Leslie Hudson, Anjanette Guile, Jose Cabrera, Emmanuel Martinez, and Haley Mosley. Daniel Fuentes, Giselle Mauricio, and Ashley Romero contributed today's show. Daniel's came from his podcasting class, which is taught by Julian Reyes. Music in the first segment is by Music for Video and Universe Afield, both on Pixabay, and A Bit Advanced Music by Adobe Stock Audio. The music from Express Yourself is by Lipstain. Our theme music is Contagious by Mark Vard. Special thanks to our Cal State LA faculty and staff, Christina Hackle, Tony Cox, Joanne Lightford-Powell, Seanel Curry, Nitin Patel, Andrew Campa, Julian Reyes, Jane McKeever, Jeff Foost, and Jesus Cruz. I'm April Brown, and for all of us at Cal State LA, thank you for listening.
LA Theater Works airs here on KPFK every Sunday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. Coming up tonight,
the shy, reclusive Laura Wingfield receives a promising gentleman caller.
No girl can do worse than put herself at the mercy of a handsome appearance. I hope that Mr. O'Connor is not too good looking.
The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams, next time on LA Theater Works.
That's LA Theater Works coming up here on KPFK tonight at 10 p.m.
Please help keep independent journalism alive and KPFK radio strong.